Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lisa H., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Tennessee. Today is Wednesday, April 16th, 2025, and this is the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book, and we're in the chapter Working with Others. We're on page 91, and we'll be reading and commenting on the first paragraph that begins, usually the family, and ends in the way of a solution, and comments on that paragraph. The reference numbers for yesterday, Tuesday, April the 15th, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 22,344. That's 22344. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 22,345. That's 22345. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I realize I omitted our readers today, but the 12 steps is Chris W., the 12 traditions, Sigrid F., readers of the text, Craig F. and Sandy K., our newcomer greeter, Lilan P., our second hour host is Jeannie B., and announcements will be given by Kathy S. Sorry about that omission, everybody. And I will now ask Chris W. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Chris W., Chris with the K. from Nashville, Tennessee. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thank you so much for letting me share, or serve, I mean.
Thank you, Chris W. from Tennessee. And I'll now ask Sigrid F. to please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, everybody. Sigrid F. recovered in South Florida. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends on unity. Oops, I'm reading the wrong one, sorry, multiple programs. I'm grabbing the correct book right now. Apologies. Um, Okay. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those who serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 11, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me do service today.
Thank you, Sigrid F. from Florida. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the top and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speakers, should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book in the chapter Working with Others on page 91. We'll be reading and commenting on the first paragraph that begins usually the family and ends in the way of a solution. I will now ask Craig F. to please begin reading.
Thank you. This is Craig F., recovered in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Usually, the family should not try to tell your story. When possible, avoid meeting a man through his family. Approach him through a doctor or an institution is a better bet. If your man needs hospitalization, he should have it, but not forcibly unless he is violent. Let the doctor, if he will, tell him he has something in the way of a solution. Well, this is one of those paragraphs that's kind of anachronistic. It's applied more to Bill's time and the time of the writing of the Big Book than it does now. Most of us don't, in all the years, all my years in OA, I've only occasionally, like twice, gone to somebody to carry the message to somebody who's in the hospital through a doctor. That used to happen for those guys. That was the way they got a lot of their new prospects. But for us today, that didn't happen. But what can we take from this paragraph anyway? We can take some principles, some ideas, some thoughts that might affect the way that we do talk to people that come to our meetings or are new or ask us about the program. One of them is the idea that addicts in compulsive overeaters are addicts. Addicts and their disease are a rebellious lot. You know, we're kind of hard-headed and prideful, and for the most part, even if we're nice and quiet about it, we don't take advice well. We're distrustful of people that want to try to lead us somewhere. So it's important not to approach somebody, I think, with the idea that you're coming to them from above, you know, that you're coming to them to be their salvation. We have to approach people, on a lot more on a level ground, that we have to come with the idea that here's who I am, here's what happened to me, here's what worked for me. You know, the tradition says we have a program of attraction, not promotion. You know, I can't be a when I go to somebody. I can't go to talk to somebody and be on a soapbox and preaching a gospel. I have to go to somebody and say, you know, I spent my life before program trying to control my food and it didn't work. And here's the things I tried. And, you know, I have to remember that when Bill went to Dr. Bob, the first real first real 12-step work that we know of, that he went and he told Bob his story, and Bob identified. He said, yeah, I here's a man that understands how I drink, because he drank the same way. And that's what attracted Bob. And that's what we have to do, if whether it's a person we meet in a meeting or a person we meet in real life that maybe has an idea, we're in program and needs the message. We have to go with the idea that the humility that says I have a disease, I have an illness, a mind, body, and spirit, but this is a program that's worked for me and helped me. And, you know, you can't share something you don't have. That's the other thing you have to remember, is if you're going to carry a message to somebody, you have to have a message to carry. Otherwise, you're just carrying the mess. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig F., for getting us started this morning. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your shares to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you've shared on any of the vision meetings on Monday or Tuesday, we ask you to hold back this morning. And who would like to share on what was read?
This is Kate P. from Massachusetts.
JDG.
Rachel K.
Rachel
Amy
K.
from Massachusetts.
Rachel K. I got Katie P., Katie G., Rachel K. Who else?
Ian.
Harlan.
Loretta H.
Loretta.
Amy M. C.
Somebody C. Can't.
Amy M. C.
Amy, I think it's Amy. You're breaking up quite a bit.
Okay, yes, Amy.
Okay, I got Amy. Anybody else?
Ian F.
Ian. So nice and clear. Thank you for that. Okay, here's what I have. I have Kate, I think it's Kate P, Katie G, Rachel K, Harlan G, Loretta H, Amy C, and Ian F. Great lineup. Kate P, you're up, followed by Katie G.
Hi, I'm Kate P. From Massachusetts. And when I read the paragraph, I read the paragraph based on what I think my higher power is trying to tell me today. And what I hear today in this message is, first of all, that what you should not do. You should not have someone else tell you who you are or talk about who you are. So that tells me about my own experience, strength, and hope, that it's got to be from me. It can't be from someone else. And then the other thing, you avoid meeting him through his family. You avoid meeting him through someone else. And then the approach through the doctor or the institution, I think of that as leading towards someone with a higher authority. And to that person, a doctor or an institution feels like a higher authority than their family. And so I'm approaching through a higher authority, and the person should have what they need, that it's not forced, and that I have something in the way of a solution, or that, you know, program has something in the way of solution. And with that, I pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Kate P. And Katie G., you're up, followed by Rachel K.
Hey, Lisa. Good morning. Thanks for taking the meeting. Good morning, everyone. Katie G., recovered in Boston. You know, I've had a lot of people, both moms and family friends, who have called me and said, you know, I have so-and-so young woman who's anorexic. And my first question is, and they want me to talk to her. And my first question is, does she know that you've asked her to talk to me? And if she says no, then I say there's one thing that you can do to help this one young woman, and that is recover, recover, recover. I also really like that it talks about not forcibly hospitalizing someone, so not forcing this program on someone. I have a stepbrother who has, he's a very severe low-bottom alcoholic. He's been sober now for 1 week. He knows about AA. I think he should be in the hospital, but who am I, right? Like, my parents want to take care of him. That's between them and God. The other thing I know for me, when I needed to be hospitalized, I sought counsel. Somebody on this line who's a spiritual advisor, I told her I wanted to go to the hospital, and she's like, you don't need to go to the hospital. You need to grow up and accept the consequences of your behavior and the role that you have. And so today for me, hospitalization meant several years ago, setting up a team of experts, right? So my sponsor, a dietitian, somebody in whom that problem had been solved that could help me identify the foods, ingredients, and behaviors that I use addictively, so that I could begin to restore weight. The other thing I really took away from this, and it's been a shift for me, if you've known me a long time, is that I forget that my job is not to dictate what I think the rules of this book are. It's really to identify in and share my experience, strength, and hope. So when I don't have experience with someone, it's best for me to find somebody who does. Right? And to say, I don't know. My ego is really big. And I really like to, when I'm an alcoholic in my cups, right? I'm an unlovely creature. And I like to push this book down people's throats. And thanks be to God, I don't do that today. Thanks be to God, I carry a message that is my own experience through the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. And that there is a solution, right? It's the treasure map that leads me to the treasure, which is God. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Katie G. from Massachusetts. And Rachel K., you're up, followed by Harlan G.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for your service, moderator, everybody who makes this meeting possible. Hi, my name is Rachel K. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Indiana. And when I first read this paragraph, because I always read this paragraph in the morning before the meeting as part of my meditation, I was like, oh, I don't have anything to share on this. And then when I heard it read again, I was like, oh, my God, I do. So my family, if compulsive overeating and addiction is genetic, you know, then my family has it in spades. If scientists want to study it, they should study my family, because there's a very strong strain of addiction, compulsive overeating, that runs in my family. My cousin tried to kill himself because of this disease. My mom is 84 and has it. My brother-in-law is sober in AA, I think. And I say I think because I am going to visit these people, my family, in a few days over the weekend. And you know, of course, in my brain, I'm thinking, okay, how can I get them to understand the kind of meetings that they need to go to? which are big book meetings, because both my cousin and, I mean, my nephew and my brother-in-law have been in OA and AA respectively, but I'm afraid they're not going to strong meetings other than that. And it's like, here it says in this paragraph, I just lost it. It says, I can't pull it up, but anyway, it says, here we go. When possible, avoid meeting a man through his family. I'm his family. They're talking about me. They're talking because these are the addicts. I am their family. So what can I do to carry the message? I can recover. Like a previous speaker said, I can recover. I can be an example. It's attraction rather than promotion. Yes, if they ask me what I'm doing, I can talk about it. And certainly I want to, you know, be a good voice for this program and for the big book and for the 12 steps and for creating a relationship with God. But other than that, I stick to my own self, my own recovery. That is the greatest way that I can carry the message, is to be an example, to be, you know, where there is chaos, to bring calm, you know, to sort of rephrase the 11-step prayer, where there's chaos, to bring calm, where there's anger and resentment, to bring peace and to bring love. So anyway, I hope some of that made sense, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Rachel K. from Indiana. And Harlan G., you're up, followed by Loretta H.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for your service this morning, and thank you to all who did service this morning. I'm Harlan G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. About 15 years ago, or a little more than that, about 17 years ago, I did a big book study weekend in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And in order to get to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, you have to land in Philadelphia. And I did. And the man who picked me up from the airport absolutely insisted in the most enthusiastic way that I stop by a hospital in Philadelphia to see a man who he needed me or wanted me to see. I really was very uncomfortable with this because I elicited from the man who picked me up that the guy in the hospital really didn't want to see me, didn't request this, didn't nothing. And I said, if the guy doesn't want to see me, let's leave him alone. Anyway, we got into the hospital, and this man was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 550 pounds. This man was absolutely enormous, and I had been at weights higher than that. My high weight was 700 pounds. We get into the hospital room, and this man is not in good shape. His lower extremities are so extremely swollen that, like mine, he had ulcers in his calves. I had cankles. I had ulcers in my cankles. But long story short, he put together instantly who I was and why I was there. He really didn't want to see me, and I kept saying to the man, let's go. Not the man in the bed, but the man who took me there from the airport. The man in the bed deliberately crapped in the bed to get rid of us. That's how strongly he did not want to hear this message. St. Francis of Assisi says, preach the gospel, and if you must, use words. The job I have today is to be the message. It's to live the message. It's to breathe the message. The job I have today is to follow the dictates of a higher power and recover, recover, and recover. Katie said it. I'm going to say it again. It's one of my mantras. Recover, recover, and recover. It was embarrassing to be in that room. I didn't want to be there, but I had no choice. Where was I going to go? The other guy who had the car. The guy soiled the bed so that we would have to leave. There is a mighty rhythm and purpose that underlay all, and there is a cosmic timing to this. And when somebody is ready, the message gets carried very easily. When someone is not ready, it's very, very difficult. If you have your phone off, it is impossible for me to call you. If your phone is on, it becomes very easy for me to call you. I have to leave my phone on today to receive this message. I want the message because I've suffered enough. And the long and the story short, and I'll leave with this. The guy in the bed was dead within a couple of months after my visit. They called me and told me he had died. And that's just an unfortunate statistic in this disease. Some of us are going to have to die so that some of us are going to have to live, and some of us are going to have to live. I want to be one of the ones that lives. I want to be one of the ones that knows what life tastes like before I die, and the only way I'm going to know what life tastes like is to recover, because I want to live right up to the minute that I die. I want to taste life, and I want to be part of life that I missed for so long, and the only way I have to do that is to put the food down and recover. Thanks, Lisa, for your service. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Harlan G. from Arizona. And Loretta H., you're up, followed by Amy C.
Good morning, Lisa, and good morning all along with my precious God. You do save my life. Loretta H., recovered in North Carolina. Okay, so I've been studying this chapter. It's such a great chapter because I've done a lot of things that they say not to do. And in fact, this is the second never. There are nine nevers in this chapter. Never force yourself upon him. This paragraph is so important for me because I've done it wrong many times. And in fact, when I first came into the program in the 80s, I transmitted something I didn't have. And as a result, I brought an anorexic home to live with me. She was in the hospital. Somebody told me to go pick her up and take her home. I'm not a nurse. I'm not a purse. And today, from all my debacles I've learned, I've also learned because I actually called AA for my sister, and she's been in recovery for close to 50 years. And I actually told the people to come, the woman to come that didn't look like an alcoholic. Okay, so this is how naive and how, until I studied this chapter, how wrong I got things. And as a result, the emotional appeal is not going to work. And so this study of this chapter is so important for me to carry the message. It's a guide. And when I do this the way the chapter says to do this, then I can attract and not promote. And today that's what I try to do. And I try to bring people through the steps very quickly so that they can see not what I have, but what they can bring to other people. Because the most important thing about this book is to be of maximum service to God and to others, and to find a God of your own understanding. And this is what I didn't have back then. I didn't find God until the second time around. I was in program for 8 years. I used something bigger than myself, but it wasn't a personal God. And today, that is why I can recover, discover, and discard. In fact, I'm going through the steps again because I have, as some people know with my 10 steps, I have a couple issues that are in my tissues right now that I have not been able to discard. So with God's grace and mercy and bringing somebody else through too, I can actually have a chance to live instead of dying with bondage to self. So with that, I pass. I really thank everybody. And today, this book is my hope to get to be a better Loretta and live in the human race with humility. Thank you.
Thank you, Loretta H. from North Carolina. And Amy, you're up, followed by Ian F.
Good morning, everyone. This is Amy M.C. in Massachusetts, recovered compulsive overeater. And gosh, ditto to so many of the things that people have shared already. But my biggest takeaway here is, yeah, this is a program of self-diagnosis. I can't and I won't, go to somebody unless they're asking for my assistance because I can't help somebody who's not ready to be helped. You know, I can't help somebody who doesn't know that they want help. You know, and my experience shows me that this doesn't work. I've done so many of the things that people have talked about. I've had the ego where I thought that, you know, well, my recovery can help my partner's recovery, and I have enough recovery to help them get recovered. Yeah, no, that doesn't work. I've shared the message as in like diarrhea'd all over other people where it's just, you know, I'm so preachy that it turns people off. And, you know, and then I've also carried the message and not the mess to the point of people asking, well, what did you do? What do you mean? You know, how do you live this way of life? You know, what does it mean when you say that, you know, that it's not a diet, it's a way of life? You know, tell me about this. You know, so it works when we work it, and it works when we follow this book as a set of instructions, and ask God for good orderly direction, and not be, you know, in self-will run riot, in ego thinking, oh, I can save somebody. You know, I use this book. I go back to the book. And the more that I study the book, the more that I work with others, I learn how to be the message, how to carry the message versus the mess. You know, I have had doctors say to me, oh, you know, that's so amazing. I wish other patients of mine could do what you do, could have that willpower that you do. And, you know, credit, I give credit where credit is due. No, no, it's not my willpower. It's God. You know, I turn my will over to the care of God one day at a time, one meal at a time. And most recently, folks, I have to share it, right? I compulsively drink water, and I've been flushing my system too much to the point of like stripping it of nutrients. And what? Okay, what's going on with me? I need to take a look. What's going on with me? How am I irritable, discontent, and seeking ease and comfort instead of going to God? Okay, thank you so much. I hear that. So, you know, in working with others one day at a time, in following these steps and asking God for good orderly direction, more is revealed. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Amy M.C. from Massachusetts. And Ian S., please share with us.
Hey, this is Ian F., compulsive overeater out of Indiana. Thank you for the shares, guys. There's lots of beautiful stuff on this meeting today. I will echo something that somebody else has shared, which is that I've often been called by mothers, usually of anorexic teenagers, who have asked me what to do. can you call my kid? Can you, you know, what do I do? And as has already been said, I just want to reiterate, like, this is a program of self-diagnosis. This is a disease of self-diagnosis. And I know, as for me, I've never done anything in my life that I didn't want to do. That's how addicts are. And it serves no one. And I actually think that it's counterintuitive to try to tell someone about this program who doesn't want to hear it, you know, because it will only incite anger, you know, that rebellious attitude. I'm so familiar with it. And so when, you know, when folks call me, I always just say, you know, give them my number and let them do with that what they will. And the only thing that stuck out to me about this was, if your man needs hospitalization, he should have it, but not forcibly unless he is violent. You know, I think, especially with anorexic teenagers, having been one, there was absolutely the necessity as a parent to, if a kid is 82 pounds at 5'4", 5'5", which is what I was, you need to keep them alive, you know. But as far as this program is concerned, that's something that we have to come to in our own time. And unfortunately, that desperation of being in that place, of needing hospitalization, is sometimes the thing that gets us there. You know, and that's important for me to remember, is I can't make anybody ready. I can help them when they are. And I can just hope that they get there eventually. So that's what I got. Love you guys. Okay.
Thank you, ENF from Indiana. And we are on page 91 in the chapter Working with Others. We have read and we're commenting on the first paragraph that begins, usually the family, and ends in the way of a solution. And who else would like to share this morning?
Linda R.
Linda.
Jennifer C.
Jennifer. Anybody else? We've got lots of time.
Terry W.
Terry W. Okay. Anybody else? I've got Linda R., Jennifer C., Terry W. Okay. Linda R., you're up, followed by Jennifer C.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Linda R., recovered in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Very grateful. And thanks, everyone, for the shares today and your service. Anyway, you know, I'm listening to this. You know, I came into program many, many years ago, and I was at someone's house. I was really in the gutter with my food addiction. I had really, my weight had soared up very high. I was morbidly obese. And I had no idea. I was visiting a cousin. I'm sitting in the kitchen, and someone started talking to me about, you know, OA. I never heard of OA before. And I said, what's that? You know, I was on every diet and possibly, you know, possibly existed. I could have bought that building in Brooklyn, you know, with the double letters, because my mother sent me there when I was 12 years old. But every time I picked up sugar or flour, I was often binging, and I never really knew what would happen to me. Anyway, long story short, I'm sitting in the kitchen. This girl, woman, comes over to me. I was a girl at the time. And she starts talking to me about OA. I said, what's OA? And she starts explaining to me. It's like AA, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I, oh, my God, I couldn't believe it. It was like all of a sudden like a light bulb. I said, where are the meetings? You know, I was so ready. And that was really God, because I had no clue that that would happen to me. And then I went to my first meeting on a Tuesday night in a building in Brooklyn, and I met my sponsor, and that was the beginning of my recovery. And it was amazing. And I'm not going to go back there, but in regard to this paragraph, like, until I was ready, I could not be pushed. There was no one out there that could convince me. Then, of course, fast forward, I married a food addict. We were both morbidly obese, my first marriage, and my kids had no fighting chance. It's biogenetic. My children inherited a disease. So in relation to my older daughter went away to college. She came home 100 pounds overweight. I couldn't look at her. It hurt my eyes to look at her. But I had been in program many years by then. They ran away from me from all the slogans I was like an ego trip walking around at the beginning of my life. It was recovery. Anyway, when I look back now, I couldn't do anything. I was powerless over my daughter. And then I just really worked my steps. I became an example, attraction, not a promotion. I kept my mouth shut, thanks to all my sponsors who had guided and directed me through my recovery. And then all of a sudden, a miracle happened. And after a few years, my daughter found program. Now she's, you know, working her steps with the program of food addiction, and she is recovered. And my son, too, he's not in program, but found other ways to find recovery and peace within their lives. And today in my life today, I know that I can only be an example. I'm the guide on the side, not the sage on the stage. I have all these slogans, but they mean something to me today. They're part of my life, and I live them every day with the grace of God. And so I just wanted to share that again, I know when to hold, I know when to fold. I have to keep my mouth shut and just wait. And then even with sponsorship, I can't make anybody do anything. I'm just the guide. I'm just the person
time.
Taking them through the steps. So thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Linda R. from Florida. And Jennifer C., you're up, followed by Terry W.
Hey, good morning. This is Jennifer C., recovered in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm thinking about this process this morning, and it's just so clear to me, you know, we're in this distinct entity. We come into this program and we learn about this distinct entity, what it means to be a compulsive overeater, what it means to have the mind of an alcoholic, and we have to fully concede that we're in this distinct entity, right? Like, that's the first step to this whole process, is that I have to fully concede, like, yep, I'm this. This book describes me. And I feel like there's a distinct entity within this distinct entity, and it's those that stay. And it's those that go after this with all their heart, mind, and soul, and they are fully convinced, like, this is the only way. And, you know, when we say we're grateful compulsive overeaters, it's like, that's what we're saying. Thank you, God, that this became my way, especially with compulsive overeating, because, you know, food addiction is so prevalent, and it's often the last to go. And even, you know, people that have recovery in other programs, like, don't touch their food. You know what I mean? Like, they'll give up their drugs and alcohol, but don't touch their food. And so by the time you get to this place where you fully surrender to this path as being the only way, there is a solution. You know, let the doctor, if he will, tell him he has something in the way of a solution. And when we fully concede to, like, this being the way to our solution, we are in this distinct entity within. And I'm so grateful that I was led to this program. And if you're here this morning and you're struggling and you haven't gotten it yet, right? Like, and you're still trying to figure it out, what you're not getting and what you still have to do and why am I not getting it? Just know, like, you're in this distinct entity that's on here this morning, that wants to get this, right? That isn't turning your back on it and saying, that's not for me. You're here. You want it. You're going after it, and don't give up. This is a miraculous process that we can't quite put our finger on how it all comes together, but we know that if we keep doing the work and we work these steps and we work them in a deep and intensive and effective way, we don't just check boxes, but we allow the spirit of the universe to really change our hearts and our souls and give us this psychic change, we know that the miracle comes. Entity, and that alone is such a precious gift. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Jennifer C. and Terry W. Please share with us.
Good morning, everyone. This is Terry W. from Massachusetts, and thank you, everyone, for their service today. It's interesting for me to think about, you know, if a man needs hospitalization, they should have it. I myself remember one day I was sitting here waiting for my girlfriend to come over, and we were going to go for a walk or whatever. And I opened the door, and there was 15 people there, and there was an intervention, obviously, saying, I need hospitalization. And I thought these people were crazy. There's nothing wrong with me. I mean, I was 72 pounds, and I didn't think I had a problem. I just thought I was fat. So, you know, I swore up and down I'd start eating, you know, I would change my world and da-da-da-da. But, you know, it's hard because if you don't know you have a problem, it's hard to talk someone into thinking or knowing they have one and the solution. So what I found through my experience is being so thin that I learned that when you're that thin, your electrolytes are off and you don't think normal. So if you're trying to take someone through this book, particularly if they're like 70 pounds, they're not going to understand what you're talking about. So sometimes I think people do need hospitalization to be able to get to a normal weight, to get their electrolytes back and be able to think normally. So if someone said, you know, let's study the big book back then at 70 pounds, I would have no idea what they were talking about because I couldn't even think straight. So God sent someone down, and this book saved my life. But, you know, at first I had to realize I had a problem. And sometimes it's hard to talk someone into knowing they have a problem. But, you know, I'm one of the lucky ones, and I try to spread the message the best I can. But this program saved my life, and I just wanted to share that. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry W. from Massachusetts. And I think we have time for probably three more shares. Who else would like to share this morning?
Anita L.
Anita L.
Sigrid F.
Sigrid F. Anybody
and
else?
Mary G. from California.
Mary. Okay. We have Anita L., Sigrid F., and Mary. Anita L., you're up, followed by Sigrid F.
Oops, sorry. Here I am. Good morning, everybody. I'm Anita L. from outside of Philadelphia. I prayed whether or not I should share because I definitely can relate into this entire paragraph with a family member. I'm getting nervous. My daughter had medical problems when she was younger, and she was a very angry child. So my point is that I tried to force her to go see a therapist several different times, and it never worked because I was trying to run the show. Of course, I was a concerned parent and wanted to help her. And then when she was a senior in high school, I was living such a great recovery program back then. I was very spiritually connected with my higher power. And one day, my daughter came up to me and said, "Mom, what is this OA thing that you do? Tell me more about it." And so I shared. And then she came to me, like people had said at the beginning of the meeting, you know. And she wasn't ready all those years. It was fourth grade when I first tried to take her to a therapist for her anger issues. And then I don't remember if it was immediately after that day when she asked me about OA or if it was a few weeks later. Regardless, she asked to go to therapy. What a miracle. And after her second visit, she came out and said to me, "At my next session, my therapist would like you to come in with us." So I went the third time, and the therapist said to me that my daughter had shared with her that she was anorexic and bulimic and wanted help. So there you go. She was asking for help. And the therapist said, "Would you support her in this?" And I, of course. And so she wouldn't go inpatient, but she went outpatient. And she went for 3 different months. She went to a couple different sessions of this rehab. And I'm so grateful for that time because we bonded, especially on the way home. And one day a week, the family member had to be in, eat breakfast with their child, with the group, and then we had a group therapy session together, everybody.
Okay.
Thank you. And so it works when I surrender, and like what was said, I recover. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Anita L. And Sigrid F., you're up, followed by Mary.
Good morning, Sigrid F. in South Florida. It was in 2012 when I was on yet my next yo-yo diet, and I was on the way down until one day I wasn't, and then I started going back up again. And I happened at that time to go visit at my sister's house, who lives many states away. And she was slim, and she had been slim for a while, and this was new. She'd been bulimic in college, and she'd been overweight for much of her life, as I was. And when I lamented to her that, oh, I'm gaining weight again, and I don't know why this keeps happening, she looked at me and she said some very fateful words. Have you ever heard of OA? And I had not. And that's all she said. So later on, I went to the website and I looked up OA and I saw there was a quiz and I took the quiz and I really got an A. I think there was one question I had answered no. And then I did what I knew best, right? I was going to do it my way. Darn it. I went right back to Weight Watchers because I wasn't ready. I had to still be proven that I couldn't do this myself. But I will tell you that next time on that diet, it was like having an angel whispering in my ear, because when I picked up that bite, which was inevitable, I heard the whisper, do you see it now? Do you see it? You can't do anything about this. And I, over and over every day, went through that, where mostly nighttime was my eating crazies. And every day, every morning, I would say, I'm not going to do it. And then every night, I would do it. And I had this angel whispering in my ear, do you see it now? And that was finally what got me to OA. I knew I was defeated by food, that I couldn't do it on my own. How many times I had tried and failed, and that it was never going to be any different. So I wasn't ready till I was ready. And it didn't matter, you know, what I heard or who told me what, or my husband begging me that my health and blah, blah, blah. Didn't matter until I was ready. So I have to remember that when I talk to people, and I have to only share my experience, strength, and hope, meet them where they are, do my best to not dictate, which is, of course, what I want to do, right? I want to control, but have to work really hard against my nature. So that's it. That's all I had to share today. Thanks for letting me. Bye.
Thank you, Sigrid F. from Florida. And Mary from California, if you'll give us the first initial of your last name, you have about 2.5 minutes. Please share with us.
I have done this several times. I've wrapped up the meeting because I finally get inspired to talk. But I have done both. I've worked in a hospital where I dealt with, and I came across many people who were very, very large. And one man, I went in and I talked to OA and I told him my story and I tried to get him lined up with people in the hospital to come and talk to him. And when he transferred, I wanted to get him into some additional rehab. And it was a total, the man went, you know, probably dancing off into the sunset with his banana splits. I'm not sure, but it was a total failure. And then I am in OA because of attraction. I was staying with some friends. I was emptying their refrigerator because I was so sneaky with my food, and then going out and bringing food back in to replace what I'd eaten. And very gently, the man and his wife who took me in for that short period of time, he was sober in the beverage program. And he gently one night said, you know, Mary Nell, you treat food like I do alcohol. And it wasn't preaching. It wasn't you should. A light went off in my head that this man knew what it was like to be craving and wanting something that wasn't good or healthy for him and was destructive. And I said, is there anything that can help me? And he said he'd heard of OA and he didn't know anything about it. But the seed was planted by this man by attraction. He showed me, and by his demonstration, that you can leave a clean, so you can lead a clean and sober life. And then I really enjoyed what Harlan said earlier with Francis of Assisi. You know, spread the word, and if desperate, then you know, spread the good news. But use words if you absolutely have to. So with all my heart, I want to live and demonstrate and with every part of my life to be a full part of program. And by attraction, perhaps I can help somebody else. And I will pass.
Thank you, Mary. What's the first initial of your last name?
Oh, J. Mary J. in California.
Thank you, Mary J. Thanks for taking us out this morning. And thanks to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. The share ID for today, Wednesday, April the 16th, 2025, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 22,347. That's 22347. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And Sandy K., will you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only until keep you until then.
Thank you. This is Sandy K. in Florida. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you.